Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, time to begin this morning's panel discussion of topics in the news. Today we are joined by our friend Judy Patrick, the editor of the Daily Gazette, and WAMC's Alan Chartok, fresh off his birthday evening. I guess he was, rabble-rousing until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. So it's nice to have you both here today.
Happy Friday. Happy birthday, Alan.
And thanks to you, Judy, and thanks to you, Raymond, for doing this step-in work, which I know you do so well.
Well, thank you very much. And did you have a successful birthday? Are you feeling a bit ill this morning?
No, not at all ill. No,
he sounds a little raspy. Time.
He does sound raspy. I think he was on the table singing, Seeger songs until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
And dancing.
And of course, you're a noted dancer.
With my bad back, right.
Yeah, not a good plan. Your doctors wouldn't be happy. Well, our panel today will kick it off with a big story in Judy's paper, the Daily Gazette, which has to do with food stamp fraud in Schenectady County. And why don't you fill us in on that, Judy?
Right. This is on the front page today. It was on our front page yesterday. It's a fairly substantial food stamp fraud case in which a couple of grocery store owners on Upper State Street in the city of Schenectady stand accused of multiple felony counts. What they are charged with doing is cashing people's food stamp benefits. People would turn in $100 and they would get $50 in cash. The grocery store owners would keep the other $50. And to the tune of $500,000.
Wow.
At this point, the DA is saying that hundreds of people could be arrested for this. They haven't arrested many people at this point, but they say this became a very busy place where people could exchange their food stamps.
So the people involved in the store is obviously in trouble, but you're also suggesting then that the people who had the food stamps are in trouble as well.
Correct. Now, so we're talking about hundreds of people, but and the food stamp program, it does come under a lot of criticism nationally for fraud, but how substantial is this fraud in the scheme of things? We looked at some numbers that said about 17,000 people in Schenectady County get food stamps to the tune of $27 million a year. So this is a small matter, but hundreds of people were involved in this, allegedly.
Now, before I get to Alan and bring this into the regional level, what is the identification requirement when you use something like that?
You know what? If you go to... They are essentially debit cards at this point.
Okay.
So it's a debit card.
Okay. Now, there was some discussion. I know there was discussion in Massachusetts. I'm not sure how far it actually went as far as becoming a rule about having pictures on these so-called debit cards. Mm-hmm. Alan, what do you think about this whole thing?
Well, look, Ray, here's the real bad problem. There are a few bad characters who mess it up for everybody. But there are many Americans who are not doing well and need it. They need it to feed their families. They need it to have some kind of sustenance, in terms of nutrition and the others. And what happens is everyone, once in a while, these bad actors get rounded up as they are now here. It goes on all over the place. And then those who are opposed to anybody on the lower end of the SES, the socioeconomic scale, are sort of brought into disrepute by association. And that's the terrible part of this from a political point of view. It doesn't matter whether you're in Schenectady, in Berkshire County, whether you're in... It does matter, however, that the authorities need to be on top of this and to watching it all the time or coming up with even a better system, because otherwise the whole program goes into disrepute, and that's the last thing we want to see happen here.
Well, there was some question about, and I believe it was Massachusetts, Governor Patrick was wrestling with this issue, about putting pictures on the cards, the benefit cards themselves, and I'm wondering where you stand on that issue.
Well, frankly, Ray, I haven't really thought it all through. I'm sure there are civil liberties issues here. But on the other hand, I also think it is so important, pardon me, it is so important that we clean the system and make sure that every single person who participates in it is the person that they're supposed to be. That and I have great affection and trust in Governor Patrick. I think he's a very decent man. If he's going to go ahead and say this is a good idea, then frankly, I think it is a good idea.
Well, I'm going to hold you to that thought about wanting to clean up everything as far as making sure people who they are when we get to our next segment about ballot rules in Texas. But we'll go back for a moment to the fraud issue. Judy, is this... food stamp, is this the tip of the iceberg? Is it going to get bigger?
No. In fact, they investigated this for 6 months, and they think they have this. They wanted to make sure that, you know, they caught as many people as they could. One of the issues also is, you know, it's a small grocery store in a poor neighborhood. Some of the people on our website are commenting, well, maybe we shouldn't let those small grocery stores accept food stamps. But you're seeing a great widespread use of these. They accept them at, you know, farmers markets. It's really important because it allows people to get fresh produce. The other thing is, a lot of poor people don't have cars, so they can't drive to the big grocery stores, so they need to be able to go to these small grocery stores.
So the scam, and that's not a good way to put it, but the transaction then was you cash these in for full value to the store and you get half cash?
Right, you get 50 cents on your dollar.
So you could buy things then that were not allowed to be purchased.
Right, the question is what would you use that cash for? I mean, the prosecutors in this case aren't saying what it's used. There was a big case like this in 2011 in Albany County, and those prosecutors were saying they were being used for, you know, drugs or alcohol, lottery tickets, things that they weren't being used to buy clothing, you know, shoes for the kids or non-food stamp things.
All right, Alan.
You know, Ray and Judy.
Ray
and Judy. One thing I think is very important is that you obviously, as you do when somebody sells alcohol from a place to underage people or cigarettes, you should disqualify that particular store from participating. It seems to me to disqualify all small stores is ridiculous.
Well, especially since in neighborhoods where that store is the primary hub, it would seem to be a tough call to make, and an arbitrary call to make to say, well, you can't, but over there you can.
Right, I think it's I think it's to the county officials to monitor this, to make sure that these guys that have the authority to accept food stamps are doing it properly. I hope in this case that they caught this really early, but it was a months long investigation. This went on for quite a while then.
All right, Alan, before we take the break, I'll let you get the last word here.
Okay, the last word is, it is terribly important we police it. It is terribly important that everybody be treated with respect, however. Just because you don't have anything in this society doesn't mean that those people who need it the most should be deprived of it or in any way disrespected.
A good last word before we hit our break here. It is the Roundtable on WAMC, and we will take a short break. We'll be back with more of our panel discussion in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from MKC Kitchen and Bath Center, Troy, offering a range of cabinetry, including showplace wood products, countertops, design services, and showroom, mkckitchens.com. Thomas Cole National Historic Site, Catskill in New York's Hudson Valley, presenting their 2013 exhibition, Albert Bierstadt in New York and New England, open Wednesday through Sunday, thomascole.org. Union Institute and University, Brattleboro, Vermont, hosting an open house, Saturday, August 3rd, from 12 to 2 p.m., graduate psychology programs featured, 1-802-257-9411 for registration. In Lake George Kayak Company, a kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard center, providing sales, rentals, and lessons. LakeGeorgeKayak.com.
Jessica O'Rourke, you're picking the music today? That's lovely bumper music. Very bluesy and very nice on a Friday. It's the Roundtable. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 20 minutes after 9 o'clock, we're joined by the editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, and our own Alan Chartok. And we spoke about the big story, or one of the big stories in the Daily Gazette, which was the big food stamp fraud investigation. And now it's moving into another phase of arrests, and it's a pretty big deal. And it ties in to some extent with the next topic we have today, and it is the U.S. Justice Department now jumping in some respect, filling a perceived gap left when the Supreme Court struck down part of the Voting Rights Act earlier, a few weeks ago, and it certainly pits Rick Perry, a states' rights guy, if there ever was one, against President Obama, who I think you could say without criticizing him is not a huge states' rights supporter, and it's a big deal. And I would love to discuss this with you first, Judy. Tell us exactly, in general, I guess, what the Obama administration moved to do yesterday.
So what they're trying to do is go back in and be able to review what Texas does when it comes to establishing its voting rules and take a look at it, because the Supreme Court decision last month essentially says you can't do this. So they are looking at another provision of the law, and they're citing past Texas practices as the rationale for doing that. That, you know, there are long voting lines in Texas, and that there have been voting problems there before as a justification for doing that. Perry says that's an end. You know, that they're doing an end run around the will of the people in Texas.
Right, and also the Supreme Court to some extent.
Right.
Democrats in Texas say, well, you know, these steps are intended to reduce voting by minority students and other heavily Democratic groups, and that's why the Republican administration in Texas wants to do this. Texas says, hey, listen, we're trying to make sure that everybody who's allowed to vote votes, and nobody who is not allowed to vote doesn't vote. Alan Shartok, I suspect you may have an opinion or two.
Well, let's take a look at the history of the way in which African Americans, for example, have been treated in the United States. First, we brought them over in chains. The colonists did. Then those people who were running the southern states. We put them in the Constitution as not full people. We passed laws. We beat them unmercifully. And then what happened next is that along comes several years later, the Civil War. We fought this thing out. But it was unsatisfactory for the southern states. And what they did was to pass Jim Crow laws, number one. The Ku Klux Klan evolved, and lynchings evolved, and we kept people, quote, in their place. It was disgusting. And as a result of this, the southern states were traveling along, doing what they were usually doing. We had lynchings. We had Emmett Till, a teenager who dared to talk to a white woman in the wrong way, killed. Or even look at a white woman in the wrong way, killed, and it goes on and on and on. Along comes Lyndon Johnson. Now, this is an interesting guy, a Texan himself. He sets up his Voting Rights Act. He gives the speech of his life. I talked to the guy who wrote it. I talked to his wife, Doris Kearns Goodwin. Dick Goodwin is the man who wrote it. He goes before the House of Representatives. He gives a joint session, I guess. Johnson, he gives a "We Shall Overcome" speech, and he turns around to his aides and he says, "I've lost the Southern states forever," and I think that's right.
A reminder to all guests to turn their phones off when they're on the program. But
maybe that's Lyndon now.
And you could not be writer. And let me tell you, I'm really ashamed.
Well, that's fine.
I'm the one who's always telling people.
Right, and you are the prime suspect here.
No, you're absolutely right. I was this prime suspect. It was my fault.
Okay.
And I do apologize not only to you individually, Judy and Ray, and to all the people in the control room, but to all the people in Radioland who I have let down once again.
Well, maybe it was the Constitution calling, because don't you think that in some respect this is an end run around constitutional separation of departments here? And the Supreme Court struck down this. Now,
I'm not done yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, continue.
The phone rang, but I'm not done yet.
All right.
I'm giving a long,
fine.
I'm giving a long, maybe boring speech.
Go right ahead.
So what happened then was that he gives this "We Shall Overcome" speech. He turns around. He says, "I've lost the Southern states," and he did. The Southern states are now basically Republican. Texas and everybody else comes along. And by the way, and the Voting Rights Act says we're going to make sure everybody gets a right to vote. One way or the other, we're going to do that. They set up places where the Justice Department takes a look and says these are the places it's being done. And by the way, it's not only southern states. It's some places, some districts in New York, for example, and some other places, as I remember the whole thing. Along comes the Supreme Court, this Supreme Court, which we know is a Republican Supreme Court. It's a 5-4 Supreme Court. And they say, surprise, surprise, You know, this kind of bigotry is live and well. We are going to shoot down the Voting Rights Act, the pride of Lyndon Johnson, and that's what happens. Now you can come back, Ray, and I invite you to do so, but I'm telling you, if you really want to know what's going on, that's what happened.
Judy?
Wow.
I'm done now.
All right, well, he's done.
So it seems like a pretty simple thing that people should be allowed to vote, and everyone should be allowed to vote, but they do put in these kind of sophisticated, complicated rules that discourage people from voting. And one of the things that's happening in Texas is they had this tough new voter ID law set to take effect, and I think it will take effect
unless
the federal government steps in. And why does that discourage people from voting? A lot of people are in support of voter ID, but a lot of people say it really does discourage people from voting.
Well, it certainly will discourage those who are not allowed to vote from voting.
True, or not everyone has IDs now. Are we a country where everybody has to walk around with an ID?
Well, yes, and if you take a look at the politics of, for example, poverty, and you're flipping hamburgers for $5 an hour, and every time you set up another requirement, say, okay, you can have a card, but you have to go to this place to get the card in order to vote. On top of registering, you also have to go to another place to get a card to do this. And, by the way, does everybody have a driver's license? No, everybody doesn't. So you know that by the time you're done with this, now, Ray, you raised a very interesting question. You said before when we were talking about policing people who are using cards to buy their groceries, what's the difference? Well, the difference here is what everybody has an absolute right to, which is to vote. And you know that every time you pull a stunt like this, you are going to discourage people from voting. We know it. There have been studies of it. In the old days, they made you read the Constitution and tell them what the Constitution was. And if you couldn't do that, you didn't get to vote. They weren't fooling anybody, and they're not fooling anybody now.
Okay. Is there not, taking away the issues, the actual law at hand, is there not a danger down the road if an executive administration then says, well, listen, I don't like this law. We're not going to defend this law. We're going to work around this law. In other words, ultimately, President Obama vindicated and justified in his non-defense of DOMA. However, a few years back, he said, well, listen, our Justice Department, we're not going to defend this. At the time, some people said, well, I mean, it's your job.
Yeah.
It's your job to defend the laws of the nation. He ultimately struck down. So, you know, history will say, well, he did the right thing. But is it proper for an administration to go around a duly constituted part of the government?
Well, the tension between, Ray, the tension between the federal government and the state governments is historic. You know, there were reserve powers to the states. But what happens as these laws have been tested over the years, the federal government has gained more and more power. I happen to like that. There are people who don't like it.
Okay.
But I'm telling you now that if you take a look, for example, at Texas itself, Texas does this disgusting thing, which is
that's a great word to stop. Hey, Alan, I tell you what, let's stop with the word disgusting. Let's take a break a short break for news, and then we'll pick it up with the word disgusting. And I think you're on a roll here, so hold that thought. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Friday morning, 9:37. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, joined by the editor of the Daily Gazette, Judy Patrick, and our own Alan Shartok. And where we left our program prior to the news, we were discussing the situation with the Justice Department, making an end around, as they used to say in football, around the recent Supreme Court decision which struck down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act. And Alan Shartok was, if you just tuning in, was about to hit a serious roll. Don't let me down now, Alan. Go.
Well, I was going to talk about something that happens not only in Texas but New York. What happens is that the congressional districts are constructed to make sure that the very minorities we've been talking about up to now don't really get a proper voice. They shove them all into one district when they could be controlling in two. And I believe, I may be wrong, don't hold me to it, gang, but I think they changed as many as 6 congressional Democrats got kicked out and replaced with the Republicans. This is all part of the same continuum of depriving minorities of their rights that I've been talking about before. Now, when you say, Ray, and I take some exception to it, even though I love you and you know it, that it's an end run on the part of the federal government. I don't think it's an end run. I think they're doing their constitutional duty to protect those people who need that protection. And the fact of the matter is that it's going to get brought to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will come up with the same decision that they came up with the last time. They may say, because if you read the decision carefully, they did say that, you know, one could take a look at some of these provisions and come up with better ways
of
doing it.
If Congress wants to do that, yes. I mean, they're free to do that. Yeah. But yesterday, you go ahead.
Yeah, no, but I was just going to say, the same 5-4 group is still sitting there that was sitting there before. So what's really going on here is that Eric Holder and the President of the United States are saying this decision, like others, is disgraceful. We're going to call attention to it. We may bring a case, a different kind of case, before the Supreme Court, and we're going to let everybody know what's going on. I think that's using the bully pulpit. TR did it, and others are doing it, and have done it since that time, and I think it's the correct thing to do.
Doesn't that show a massive lack of respect for the Supreme Court and in one of the equal branches of government, and ultimately will weaken it and thus weaken the entire bedrock of what our government is made from?
That kind of testing has gone on in the history of the Supreme Court. One president says the Supreme Court has made their decision, now let them enforce it. Look, the fact is, I see no reason to respect a Supreme Court which comes up with a Citizens United decision and basically changes the landscape of people buying votes massively with all kinds of money. I don't respect it. I may respect the institution. I do respect the institution. But I do think when they deserve to get kicked around a little, they are, intellectually, certainly.
I see. Judy?
In this case, Eric Holder, in his speech yesterday when he talked about this, he mentioned that they had studied it, and the Texas legislature had purposely redistricted redrawn their lines to discriminate against Hispanics, and the courts blocked that. So it is a give and take, and the court does get involved when you get these very important social issues. I mean, if you had a pure democracy, a lot of social advances would never have happened in this country, you know, especially when it comes to minorities.
And especially when you take a look at all states do this to some extent. New York State did. You may remember that Andrew Cuomo, our own governor in New York, ran, your governor, because I live in Massachusetts, ran on a platform. His number one thing was, we're going to stop the legislature from constructing districts in their own interest. We're going to have an outside group do that, a fair group do that. But when he became governor, he didn't. And by the way, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, it's the reason that the Republicans are still in control of the New York State Senate, albeit with the help of, you know, 4 Democratic guys who split off from the Democratic majority in because there are now more Democratic votes than there are Republican votes. It all comes back to what Cuomo said he was going to do and didn't do.
From Texas to New York State.
That's right. He ties it all together. All right. Well, let's move on here on the roundtable. And another piece of news, which you hear everywhere this morning, is about the Trayvon Martin killing, the George Zimmerman acquittal. Juror number B-29 now says Zimmerman, quote, got away with murder. And this is an interesting ABC interview. I don't know if you had a chance to see that one, Alan, but
I read about it.
Fascinating. Saying, hey, listen, we could not convict, but in my mind, he, quote, got away with murder. Judy, you go first.
Hey, if you cover jury trials and you listen to the judge's instructions, the judges or the juries are very carefully instructed that if B, then Q. They have to, they go through this system. And under the law, the jurors, in this case, it sounded like really followed the judge's instructions, and they couldn't find a legal basis for the conviction. And this is what we've been hearing all along on this case. It's interesting that this one juror, the only non-white member of the jury, said that she does believe that, you know, the killing was intentional. But the law couldn't prove it, and you have to prove it. The courts are imperfect, but they do require that you prove things.
I mean, she said this was the trial was a publicity stunt. Go ahead, Alan.
Even when the president of the United States addressed this the other day, he was very careful with what he said about the jury and the verdict, and he said, if I remember correctly. He said that he wasn't going to deal with the verdict because I think Judy's point is well taken. I don't think the jurors had what they needed to work with to convict, the hard evidence that they needed to do. But this juror spoke for a lot of Americans when she said, you know, he got away with murder. And while, you know, there wasn't the evidence that we needed to do this, he was going to have to deal with the eyes of God. Which was an interesting way of putting it, because for the rest of his life, he's going to have to go through this. Now, you know, a lot of people go into what's called denial. We see it again and again and again. This very famous thing I'm always referring to, a lie detector on somebody's arm, and you say, did you kill Trayvon? And he says no, and you get a straight line, because the only way he can live with himself, if that's the case, is to go into this denial stage and say, I know I didn't do it, and come up with whatever he needed. We see it all the time.
Well, I do think that there is a real leap, not a leap, but a certain willingness of many in the media to labor under the assumption that he is guilty. And juror B37 said, well, you know, we believe that Mr. Zimmerman had good intentions, but events just went terribly wrong. So there may be a line there between, I mean, we weren't there. So we really don't know. And I think that ultimately we have to say, look, and the president said the same thing. You've got to respect what the jury said. And you can look at the OJ case, which I had a burst appendix and I was laid up for a month at this particular time. And I watched the entire thing, as disgusting as it was. By the end of that trial, I knew, yeah, he probably did it, but he's going to walk. The prosecution did just a very bad job in that case.
Again, it's an imperfect system, but the legal system, it works a lot of the times, and it tends to come down in favor of a presumption of innocence. That's the basic here.
Yeah, Alan.
And if we were on trial ourselves, we would want that presumption.
Yeah. No, Zimmerman.
We want that presumption.
Unintentional or intentional, whether that killing was, Zimmerman's going to feel badly. He killed another person. And it's something most people who have done this, they walk around with that the rest of their lives. It's something they deal with, whether he did it intentionally or unintentionally.
Yeah, the point of the juror, exactly what she said. However, there is a larger sociological issue here. And we've been dealing with it for days. We've been dealing with it on the round table. We've been dealing with it as a country. You put two people in the street. One of them is a white teenager. One of them is a black teenager. We know statistically what's going to happen. The black kid is going to be stopped. He's going to be frisked. He's going to be questioned. It's not only black people, but sometimes it's people with curly hair. Do you guys remember when Bob Zimmerman, another Zimmerman, wasn't right?
Bobby Zimmerman.
Was walking in New Jersey, Bob Dylan, with his wild hair and his looks, and the cops came over. Can you imagine two policemen in this country who don't know who Bob Dylan is, and pull him over? And you know he treats them well and respectfully, and you know they get their heads handed to them by the press and everything. You don't know who Bob Dylan is, but imagine you're a parent. And your kid is mistreated by the police. You're mistreated by the police bad. Your kid is mistreated by the police. Is there anybody listening to me right now, Ray, with five children, if a cop disrespects your child? somewhere. Now, if you take the statistics and you look at what's happening in this country, which is if you're black, get back, you better believe that we have a major problem that transcends this trial, but is brought to light by this trial. And that is where the furious anger on the part of so many blacks, so many whites in this country lies. We're not doing enough to make sure that that kind of thing doesn't go on.
And that's one of the points that Alice Green brought up last week on this show. Or was it earlier this week? Gosh, this has been a long week. But
yeah,
her basic point was a terrible tragedy, but in a way, a positive in that all of these things that have been there but not discussed are being discussed.
Right. Let's hope they're being discussed rationally, too, though. And sometimes these discussions just exacerbate the problem. And people start to say, oh, yeah, of course he's going to stop the black kid in the street because he's the one more likely to be burglarizing the house. I mean, you get that on our website, too. I mean,
Gazette website?
Yeah, you get that kind of discussion, too. And so it further solidifies biases in many cases. There's a lot to be done in this country in terms of racial acceptance.
You make an interesting point. And do you actually tend to go in and look at a lot of the comments? I mean, how are they running on this?
So we look at everyone. We tend to have a conservative commenter base. And so they do tend to think that Zimmerman, justice was done in the Zimmerman case. I think it's running 3-1.
Hmm. Interesting. Go ahead,
speaking,
Alan.
Speaking of which, we did get somebody at Roundtable at WAMC.org who says, Ray keeps saying this is an end run. It is not. The Supreme Court struck down Section 4. The current maneuvers by Secretary Holder is based on
Section 3.
Actually, Section 3
right.
of the VRA.
The bail-in.
Which has not been struck yet.
But the bail-in.
There is no end run.
But the bail-in requires the department to, you know, go after jurisdictions that have committed constitutional violations. It's not a blanket thing. There have to be specific cases involved. So I stand by my statement.
And Rick Perry is the one who also said it was an end run.
Oh, did he say that in that exact word? I apologize to Mr. Perry for plagiarizing his words. This is a great spot to take a break and run this all by legal. Jessica, let's take a break. We'll be back with more in the saga of Carlos Danger. It's coming up on the Roundtable.
Support for WAMC comes from Foresight Land Services, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. For 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, land planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. Austerlitz Historical Society, presenting the 14th Annual Blueberry Festival in Old Austerlitz, New York. Sunday, July 28th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., oldausterlitz.org. Berkshire Health Systems, working to improve the health of people in the Berkshires and surrounding communities, berkshirehealthsystems.org. And Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975. CapitalCitiesVW.com.
Grateful Dead. Uh-huh. Working Man's Dead. Nice bumper music there, Jessica O'Rourke. It's the Roundtable 951. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette is here. Alan Chartok is here. And, oh, we're going to let Alan go first here. Anthony Weiner's Anthony Weiner's favorability plunged more than 20 points among new revelations that, Carlos Danger was more prolific than even we had thought. And now he's trailing Christine Quinn, 25-16 in the race. My question for you, Alan, and we'll get into the disgusting details if necessary. Does Weiner bail out here? And notice I didn't say pull out. Oh, I just did. Rats.
Oh, boy. He, in fact, does not bail out. Because he has a particular kind of arrogance, he has a particular kind of worldview, and in fact, he's come back before, he'll come back again. As I have said so many times, I wouldn't vote for him, I never liked him. I do think, though, that the voters have a right to make this decision. I do think, though, that, you know, the first class that I always give is always devoted to the definition of politics. Politics is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources or how you cut the pie. But the second thing I always deal with is, if you want to understand political doings, you have to understand the political actors. And the way you understand the political actors is you examine the concept of character. Freud said character starts at four, never changes. I happen to be a believer in that. I think you can mature a little bit. I think you can step around some of your foibles, but you are who you are. What we're learning about Anthony Weiner here is that he is what he is. He knew that this stuff was out here. He said when he got caught the first time, it's out there. But what's most interesting about this is that he continued to do it after he was caught. Now that goes to character. That says, hey, what are you, an idiot? You got caught, you did it, you kept doing it. I think that's probably what disturbs that 20% who have bailed on Weiner.
Oh, I think that's certainly what's caused his dramatic drop, and I think he'll be gone in the next few days.
I agree with you, Judy.
Yeah, there's no way he can continue. It's early in the race too, remember, and he's got a lot of money he's got to raise yet, and I can't imagine people throwing money at this point.
No, internet startups might, but I mean, I don't see anybody else.
You know, it's a pretty good time for Christine Quinn, I think.
Yeah.
Not only Christine Quinn, she's not the only one. I mean, we have other candidates who are coming up real fast, like Mr. Thompson, who narrowly lost the last time out. So for mayor. So he has been coming up real fast in New York, Bill Thompson. And I don't think it's only Christine Quinn who benefits from this. And by the way, guys, just so you'll know, if it's out there and if somebody knows about it, and if one of your political opponents knows about it, they're going to use it every way that they can. And they've got people investigating all of this. They're going to go out. They're going to find it. They're going to use it. I would recommend to everybody that they see the film, The Candidate with Robert Redford, where the guy says in the beginning to Robert Redford, who's the candidate, listen, you tell me everything that you think may come out in this election, and we'll drop it now in the beginning so that when by the time the election comes closer, we'll say, that's old news.
I mean, he knew all of this stuff better than anybody had happened, and he knew what you just said, that they were going to use it, they were going to find it, and yet the was it the ego? Was it the hubris? What? Why?
Good question. Why would he do that?
The first day of class, it goes to character. It goes to character. If you want to know who people are, you examine their past. You examine the way that there was a guy named Barber at Duke who examined Woodrow Wilson. And he found that Woodrow Wilson became predictable after a while based on things like his letters to his mother. You could see it all in retrospect. And now I think we can see it all interesting. Elliot Spitzer was asked, and he's my friend, I love the guy, was asked the other day whether he had committed his sins again since, based on what was going on with Weiner, since his downfall, or temporary downfall anyway, and he said absolutely not.
You know,
that's interesting.
One of the other interesting parts about this is the focus that's been put on Weiner's wife and whether or not, you know, it was right for her to stand by her man. And I think that takes the attention away from the real issue is Weiner's character. I found that fascinating from a feminine perspective that, you know, we're going to pass judgment on her, whether or not she should have stood there and how she should handle that problem in her marriage.
Doesn't she have a right to some extent be upset that he's putting her through this?
Oh, yeah. I think she does have a right to be upset about that. But do we have a right to really judge what she does and how she does it?
No.
Well, is that at your position?
That's not my position. That's my question.
As a woman.
As a woman, I find the judgment of political wives a little distasteful.
Alan?
I don't get that. I'm sorry.
I think I think if you spend too much time discussing whether or not what she's doing is right or wrong, you're not discussing the real issue here is whether Wiener is it should continue his campaign for mayor of New York City.
Well, the Democrats are certainly abandoning him to some extent. Now, according to this poll, it's out of Politico that I'm pulling this article. 55% of Democrats viewed Wiener unfavorably compared with 30% who see him favorably. That's a dramatic reversal from June when 52% had a favorable view. So apparently a line has now been crossed.
The polls.
I was never one of those, by the way, who had a good view of him. So I can't speak on this.
All right.
So you are saying, Alan, that he is going to stay in the race?
I do. I think if you examine his character, examine what he's done up to now, his need to get back into this, he's going to say, I'm staying in.
I think you are completely wrong.
I know, but if he bails, I was the one who told you the other day that the prince was going to be named George. You all shook your heads and said, oh, how does he know that?
I don't remember you
saying
that.
And of course I knew.
When did you say that?
I did say it, and with David Gustina in the morning, 7:34, I said that kid is going to be named George. Because there have been a lot of Georges in British royalty, and I knew that the Queen's mother's name was George, and sometimes that's why you do things, to satisfy,
you know, somebody else. The Queen's mother's name was George?
Father.
Because that would have been an odd, even for the British royals, that would be strange. All right, well, that's an odd, strange non sequitur way to end the program, or the end of the first hour anyway.
Why not?
Well, Alan, happy birthday once again. Have a great weekend. I hope your hangover goes away, and we'll see you on Monday.
Okay, yes, you will.
All right.
And Judy, thanks for everything you've done for us.
You're welcome, Alan. Take care.
Great job, Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette. We encourage you to check out the articles there today. You can join us by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. That's all the time we have for this hour. More Roundtable on the way.